In the studio, I've got our new community board chairperson, Dennis Amor. Good morning and congratulations.
Thanks, Aaron. Good morning to you as well.
Yes, I say that with a smile on my face because last time I interviewed was the election interviews and no one seemed to really be that keen to be the chairperson, but you've been given the honour anyway.
Yeah, well, that's why I did put my hand up in the end and that sort of thing. There's some quite exciting things happening. There's some quite exciting things that we can look at going forward. And that, so I feel probably the next 3 years I can add some value.
Okay. How was the election experience for you? I know you've been through one before, but maybe it's different when you're doing it a second time.
It was really fairly laid back, I guess, you know, because we didn't, at community board level, there's not a lot of campaigning. We do a radio interview and then we do a group session in the town hall. And that's really all the public interface you have with it, unless you're other than talking to friends and saying, "Hey, can you vote for me?"
Right. And did they, or were they relaxed and laid back that they forgot as well?
Well, if you look at the numbers, only 30-odd% voted. So yeah, some did, some didn't.
Yeah,
but, enough did to get us across the line.
Yeah, we're one of the highest parts of the Waikato district when it comes to voting percentage, but we're in a district that's like in the bottom 10 for the country, in a country that's not performing well. So
yeah, it is disappointing. If you know, it'd be good to see more people get out there and vote. You know, you look at it in other countries and even at top level government level and that sort of thing, it's not compulsory in New Zealand, whereas in Australia it's compulsory and things like that. So you would just like to see, you know, if people want to take an interest in what's happening, get out there and vote and have your say and lobby whoever you've voted for.
Yeah. Normally I ask, like I talked to the mayor yesterday and asked her what was coming up because she was fully on the campaign trail and what she was hearing from people while she was on the trail. But I know you weren't on a campaign trail and you just explained that, you know, there's not that much to do for a community board campaign. But you're still talking to people anyway. What are you hearing that people are, what are their concerns at the moment?
Oh, I think they're the same things we're seeing on a national basis as well. You know, it's around housing, it's the way the economy's going. It's, you know, talking to a lot of older people, they're sort of seeing their investments disappearing in value and things like that with KiwiSaver dropping. It's just those usual things that we're seeing. They're not just local issues, they're national issues.
Is there? Yeah, that's a curious one about KiwiSaver. I was always dubious about giving money to people to play with on the stock market. There's always inevitably maybe a downside to that. Are there KiwiSaver things where you could just like put it in a bank and just gently rise? This is not your area of expertise, obviously, but
no, I think the interesting thing, I had a friend come to me 12 months ago. He was an apprentice. He started with us 40-odd years and he came and dropped in. And I see him quite often, but he came in and he said, "Thanks very much." And I said, what for? And he said, "Well, 40, 50 years ago, you kicked my ass and told me to go into superannuation scheme. I've gone into a superannuation scheme. And now," he said, "I won't tell you what it's worth, but it certainly was well worth doing."
Right.
So I think, you know, if you're in there for the 30 or 40 years, get in there when you're 17 or 18 and just keep putting a little bit of money away. At the end of the day, yeah, when you come to retire, swings and roundabouts, it's gone up and down. We've seen global crises come and go. But the reality is, as long as you don't have to pull it in out in the low, it's going to accumulate in value and be worth it at the end of the day. And I can say that from my own experience with being in a super scheme.
Yeah. Okay, well, back to the community board. The only one new member, Ross Wallace, who had a very popular man, apparently, it would seem. But I guess the main thing I'm saying is it's mostly the same board members. I presume you guys are planning to continue the work that you've been doing, really.
Yeah, well, firstly, it's great to have Ross on board. It expands, I guess. He's come in from a rural background. He's a dairy farmer. I'll let him explain what his interests are and things like that. But he brings that rural element back into the community board, different viewpoint and that sort of thing. And no doubt he'll advocate on other things for farmers. And that's one of the challenges I think the new community board's got to look at. We've grown from a fairly small geographic area to an area now that goes right out to the Aotea and out to, the turnoff Aotea and Waitutuna.
Yeah.
So we're a huge geographic area now. So, you know, we've got to look carefully at how we advocate on behalf of the farmers rural sector and that sort of thing. And there are things that sort of stand out, such as roading, forestry, what developments we're going to see on the hill countries around this area and what council's prepared to accept and not accept. So there's quite a lot to do in that sector as well.
I did notice when the district plan that's, where is it? It's sort of finalised now. At one point, I did notice that there was a lot of that flat land beside Tuku Primary School was someone was wanting to turn that into residential. And I guess those sorts of issues, that those might be the issues that people rurally are thinking about.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly where that's got to.
I don't know either.
Heard it had gone back to council. But I am aware that there are other people complaining about, you know, if you put 90 sections in there, that, which is what I think was proposed, then you've got all the wastewater and sewage runoff and treatment, and where's that all? Okay, it'll go into the ground, but where's it going to leach out to into the wider stream?
Yeah, what's the solution
into
to
the
that?
The harbour and things like that. So a lot more work needs to be done around those sorts of things before we propose subdivisions in the middle of sort of rural areas.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can, you kind of see why someone would want to do it, and maybe it's a different sort of community than being in Raglan, but... Now that we've brought that up, I probably better follow that up and find out whether that actually stayed in or whether it's a non-issue anymore.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not 100% sure.
So the work that was ongoing from last term, it feels like it was a generation ago or something, but it's only a few weeks ago we were talking about our work at the wharf. How's all that going?
Yeah, the wharf structural work's still ongoing. Other than this sort of fencing around the place and the barge with the air compressor and everything on it, there's not a lot to see. It's all happening under the wharf, but that's ongoing. And feedback I had from Richard, it's progressing reasonably well. And then there's the pontoon, which is part of that first stage of the project, which I'm not sure if the piles will go in before Christmas still or whether that's still now planned for after Christmas, but I'll check up on that. And I guess the good news is that... through the Better Ways funding, we've got another $3.2 million, I think it is, it's been announced. And that's still subject to DIA final sign-off, but that will allow the West Walkway to proceed. So, but effectively...
Well, that was only in limbo for a short time, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we're pretty fortunate that other funding became available and so we were able to apply to that.
$3.2 million just for that?
Yeah, it's fairly extensive when you...
That was like the extended amount of money, but okay. If it's happened, it's happened. That's, I shouldn't question it.
Yeah. No, it's fairly extensive and it'll it'll continue the walkway from the existing walkway that's down there right through to the Dolphin.
Yeah.
And there'll be access to the water off that walkway, areas for people to stop and sit down. And things like that. So the big thing is from a safety point of view, it's got a big bonus in that it gets people off that roadway, which is effectively only one car wide going around the back of the silo accommodation.
Yeah.
And things like that.
And it is much busier down there.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's getting very much busier.
Before Christmas, before the election, residents around the Cambrai Road area were upset about the Cambrai Road walkway might disappear. Someone looking at the plan in council said, oh, we could just put a walkway around here and everything will be fine, but it was actually extremely steep. Has that progressed?
Yeah, to be honest, Aaron, I'm not sure at the moment. I need to follow up on it. I know it was with the parks guys to have a look at the options and take into consideration and talk to the people from that area, and they've got a contact for that. So I just need to follow up with them and see where they've all got to and what the final outcome is.
Yeah, that's one where there was a petition and quite a lot of agitation, wasn't there?
Yeah, I believe there's a petition by 100-odd people in the local area that was put forward. So, you know, council needs to take note of what they're doing and have a discussion with them. And between them, both parties, sort of, we need to come to an agreement what's going to be a suitable solution.
Yeah, I think the staff concern was that the area would flood, but when it floods, all the houses around it flood as well, so...
Yeah,
the walkway is the least of the worries, really.
I'm familiar with the area and I'm familiar with the flooding. I've seen it down there and that sort of thing. It does flood, but the walkway that's going along beside the present drain, stream, I guess they call it, and then up the hill is reasonably easy to sort of walk along and go up, whereas where they're proposing to put it, which is sort of one or two sections closer to the wharf, it is quite steep there, and I'm not quite sure how they're going to do the access from there down onto the beach.
It would certainly cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be cheaper to raise the walkway, beside that's existing at the moment, I suspect. But we'll let that process play out. There's also a lot of footpaths being built around the place. We're trying to create a footpath that starts from town and goes all the way out into Wainui Reserve. Have we filled in the gaps yet?
We're nearly filled in the gaps. I haven't driven out in the last few days. But the bit from Rocket to Pohakuna Marae has been going flat out.
Yeah.
And that'll certainly, if it's not finished already, it's probably not very, it's only a week or two away, subject to the weather.
Yeah.
And then they're looking at the bit from Pohakuna Marae back to, all the way back to whatever that shop was. It was the old Raglan West store.
Yeah.
Showing my age there. And then hooking up into the bit they did just above Marine Parade. So they're looking at tidying all that up as well.
Okay.
So yeah, that'll give us that walkway basically all the way from town. If you want to go over the Raglan footbridge along Papahuia, and then around Marine Parade, and then all the way out to Wainui Reserve. So it'll be a pretty attractive area to cycle as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That sort of thing.
That was not funded by ratepayers, was it? Was that a government funded, or some of it a government funded walkway, or am I thinking of something else?
No, I think some of it was government funded. I'm not sure 100% how much and in which sections.
Okay. The Coastal Reserve Stakeholders Meeting. There was a Coastal Reserve Stakeholders Meeting before the election. I won't say Christmas again because that's not what that was. Very different to Christmas. You were there. Lisa Thompson was there. There were a lot of ideas thrown around. What happens with those ideas?
Well, at the moment, set of minutes have been circulated to all the parties that were there.
Yeah.
And we, as a community board now, there's two aspects of it, I guess, is there's various actions in there that we need to address and move forward with the individual groups, such as the cycling guys and that sort of thing. And we need to have discussions with the bookings committee to see how that's being done, because there were some queries raised around some of the bookings.
Yeah.
So that's one aspect of it. We need to follow up on all the actions. We'll, as a community board, we need to sit down and revisit those and then just see who's going to take responsibility for which ones and follow them through.
Yeah.
The other aspect is that came up and continually gets discussed is the fact that, should we have a Wainui Reserve Committee like they used to have, or a Reserves Committee?
Because there's Wainui Reserve, Papahua, and Manu Bay?
Manu Bay, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess if we're going to, I guess the first thing is to sit back and say, well, if we did have one, what's the terms of reference for it? What is it really going to do? Is it just a talk fest? Or is it actually going to take responsibility for developing the reserves and go out and find money and do something and be really active?
Yeah.
If it's just another meeting for the sake of a talk fest, well, we can run, community board can run one of those every 6 months and we can have a chat, but, it's not going to achieve a lot. So we need to sit down and just see, well, if we went that way, what is the benefits? Or is there a better way to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a bit of work to do around that before we make any decisions moving forward.
Okay. Back to the existence of the new community boards. You guys, you had a meeting, obviously, where you were appointed chairperson. Have you had much time to get together yet?
No, we're planning to get together in a couple of weeks' time just to sit down and sort of revisit everything that was on the books before the elections.
Yeah.
And then sort of pick up on some of those things, because there are some things that we need to probably revisit before Christmas. We need to sort of say, well, freedom camping is probably going to be another major issue this coming year for everybody. It's sort of already raised its head in Otago and down south, I see. They're pulling their hair out down there already with a number of camper vans.
Yeah, well, our tourists are back now, international tourists, so it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah. So we, a couple of years ago, we put a map out where you could camp and where you couldn't and that sort of thing. So we probably need to revisit that. We've only got 4 weeks, so we probably need to get that reprinted and circulated around to Info Hub and various other people like yourselves, and just say, hey, if people ask, this is where they can camp and can't camp.
Yeah.
There's a few things like that to do.
Under the legislation, it's more a case of these are the places you can't camp, and then so they go somewhere else, and then that gets added the next year because the people there didn't like it.
Yeah, it's something that going forward we need to sit down, because I'm led to believe, I've asked the question, well, why can't we park in some of the parks and reserves? You know, if you look at Mono Bay, you look at Wainui Reserve, we've got toilet facilities, we've got shower facilities, why can't they park there? But apparently under the Parks and Reserves bylaws, they can't freedom camp in those areas. So I think we need to realistically sit back and say, well, is this a situation where, yes, we should be allowing them to camp, but they've got to move on by 8 o'clock in the morning or something like that? Because, you know, there's facilities, they're not causing a problem to nearby residents and things like that. So I think there is some opportunity to probably just revisit that and use a little bit more common sense.
Yeah. I also think it might be a national level issue as well,
it certainly is. You know, yeah. I was involved with Meridian in the South Island doing some of the parks and reserves maintenance, and you know they had put in public toilets and things like that, and freedom campers and camper vans, not just freedom campers but ordinary camper vans, turning around, use them as waste dumps, and you know then they didn't become public toilets because they were just waste dumps for everyone else to dump all their stuff.
Yeah, it sounds very unsavoury.
Yes.
Hey, I had an interview with the mayor yesterday. And I asked her about a structure plan, and she wasn't – I mean, fair enough, she said, I don't know what the planning department's capacity is and what they've got on their schedule. I asked the question because I keep hearing – well, first of all, Bob McLeod used to talk about it a lot. He wanted a structure plan for the town, and people have been saying, oh, why does this happen? Why does this happen? I've been saying, well, partly because we don't have a structure plan. What are your thoughts on this elusive beast?
Well, yeah, it is something I raised when, you know, in the couple of times I did talk that Raglan did need a structure plan. So I'm fairly passionate about, you know, the one thing I'd like to achieve in the 3 years is to sort of get a structure plan, even if it's only in draft, up and running.
Yeah.
You know, we've got you look at Raglan at the moment, we've got a hell of a lot of development going on and proposed. And if we don't start to take a more holistic view of what do we want in Raglan, and come back to your pet one of soccer fields and things like that,
yeah.
You know, a structure plan would identify that in these areas we could probably put those things if our development is going to go ahead.
Yeah.
So we should be looking at a development of 160 hectares, for example, and saying, yeah, okay, the development will probably go ahead, it's going to get approval, but within that development we want to ensure that these public facilities are catered for.
Yeah.
That's just one example, but... It also applies to sort of high-rise buildings and various other things within the town.
Yeah.
You know, we need to have a plan that sort of looks out 25, 50 years and says, well, we, you know, like the subdivision plan that shows the five or six key areas around Raglan that are going to be developed in the next 25 years.
Is that the 2070 plan you're talking about? So yeah. Those are kind of amorphous blobs.
Yeah, but it's
something. So
yeah, well, instead of a developer coming and says, oh, I want to do this and this is what I'm going to put in it and I'm going to stick in 550, 400 square metre sections and please approve it, but I don't give a shit about parks or playgrounds or anything else.
Yeah.
That we can turn around and say, well, hang on, you know, we're prepared to consider it, but we need to these things need to be included within that reserve area. You know, I had one of my sons in Melbourne, and he was in the middle of a new subdivision. And within, I think, I can't remember exactly, but it was either within about 500 or 800 metres of every house, there had to be a park.
Right.
So that was part of the design criteria for a subdivision.
So was that like a suburban subdivision with individual freestanding homes?
Yep, all freestanding. Well, there was freestanding homes and apartments. It was different. You know, there was the facility to do different things. Plus it had a community area. With a hall and tennis courts and things that all shops all were included within the subdivision design. So you could actually look at the design and you could look at the 300 odd hectares. Can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a huge area. And you could actually see what was going to be developed and put where. And that was all done right at the start.
Yeah, and at the moment in Raglan it's left to individual developers and they're going to do what they're going to do. But yeah, like you say, it's not a holistic approach, a big picture look at what we want as a community. And I did mention, like I asked about this single freestanding houses, because you look around New Zealand now and there's a lot of 400 square metre sections and everyone's got a metre and a half boundary between the wall of their house and the fence and then another metre and a half to the next wall of the house, and it's just dead land.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the width of a garage for a single car, for instance. and why, yeah, we need to think about, are we so attached to having freestanding dwellings? Would it be smarter to have some areas where it's apartment, sort of apartments?
Well,
I not think, like, not, I'm not saying like round by the museum, because that was designed under a system that you're not going to be able to do anymore. So it's a big blob, but
yeah, I guess it's yeah. I think the New Zealand idea of everyone owning their own section and things like that, and their own block of land, we need to consider going forward, because we've got limited amount of land, population growth, things like that. And you can have high rise facilities that work extremely well. I lived in one in Sydney for 3 years when I was over there, and it was probably a 1.5 hectare site, and it probably had it had five different tower blocks on it, but they were only four stories high. And that sort of thing, and every floor had about three units on it, and they varied from one bedroom to three bedroom units. And they were actually reasonably competitive to buy compared with anything else selling on the market. You know, houses were selling in Sydney for about $1 million there, but you could buy one of these for about $400,000.
Do you think we're going to end up with stuff like that in Raglan? People will be nervous about that.
I know people in Raglan are nervous about it, but you know, they're also complaining they can't find somewhere to live or rent and things like that. So I think we've got to be a little bit more pragmatic. Something that big is probably too big, but you can have areas where you could have three-story blocks, and that sort of thing with apartments in. Okay, we probably don't want them in the middle of the town centre, but, you know, if you're looking at the subdivisions that are proposed, there's probably areas within those that you could actually put them quite aesthetically down in the lower areas of the contours and things like that, where they would look all right, and do one of, say, 12 blocks, 12 apartments.
Yeah. John Lawson was actually proposing round by the wharf would be a good place, because it's hidden from view for most of the town. So people over in Tiako might not like it, perhaps, but it's a thought. John was the last person I was expecting to suggest, you know, a multi-story building. But
well, if we want to do something that's affordable, it's really one of the few options. I don't think tiny homes in the long term are going to suffice for families. Great for a couple or a retired couple in a way into a home. But, you know, if you've got three kids, they're not really the, you know.
Well, if you've got three kids, the first thing you do is put massive awnings on the side of it and, like, triple the size of it. So,
Yeah.
No, we all know what it's like with small kids. The housing crisis always coming up. Another question I asked the mayor is council going to stop selling off land? Because I've seen two paper roads sold off for private house building, and also the depot up on Manukau Road. All of these are areas of land that council could, if it wanted to get involved in solving the housing crisis, or at least contributing, those are pieces of land that could have been a place that something started, maybe a trust is created or something like that. Like, have you got thoughts about that sort of thing? Has council got any more empty bits of land? That's another question.
Yeah, I'm not sure what. Well, I know a couple of bits of land here that I've got concerns about if council sold off, but I won't go into the details of those at the moment. But
right.
If we want to make affordable housing, one of the options are for council to own, to buy land, if it already owns that land, then, like you say, put a trust together, develop the housing, and sell it off, not necessarily at a huge profit, but at a rate that makes it affordable for others, but it doesn't cost ratepayers anything either.
Yeah.
A bit more than cost, but it's certainly one way that things could be done.
Is that... Does the community board feel like a powerful enough place to actually do anything about the housing crisis?
I guess it's at the end of the day, the community, you know, I look at it that most of the community board members have got full-time jobs.
Yeah.
So to start getting involved in a lot of sort of stuff that takes a lot of planning work and requires a huge amount of time, you'd have to be really, really passionate about it to put in a lot of volunteer hours to achieve it.
Yeah.
So I think we can lobby on behalf of the community, but to actually take a project and try and make it, turn it into, or take a block of council land and turn it into a project would be quite challenging.
Yeah. And speaking of community board powers, every mayoral candidate said that delegating powers to community boards is a great idea. Interviewing the mayor again yesterday, she was definitely looking at it. One of the things was like, say it's important to establish what the community board's capabilities are, which means individual capabilities, and you're the one with the time to be the chair, and the others have all got jobs. but I thought, isn't it a smarter move to have, like, why is the community board doing the extra work if they have more power? Surely that's for staff to do.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, and it's one I've sort of looked at with what we tried to do with Places of People and tried to do with the wharf, setting up the projects control group and that sort of thing. And we probably didn't achieve exactly what we aimed for originally, but we certainly had a fairly significant input onto how the consultation was done, and that sort of thing, and the outcome of the project. So I think the community boards can certainly, more power, more responsibility can be devolved to the community boards, and they can take responsibility for some projects, but then council will, at the end of the day, the community board has no money and doesn't have a budget. So council's still got to manage that. But we could have, if it was a smaller type project like Places for People, the project manager could be appointed by council. He could be directed by the community board or committee of the community board and community to carry out that project. So he reports back to that group rather than back into council all the time, as long as it stayed within budget. So there are ways it could be done. And then we'd have to flex that on, try that on smaller projects. But it comes back again to the, you know, the skills and the capabilities of people within your community board and people you can bring into some of those committees to do some of those things.
Yeah, I haven't seen. We talked in the past about Thames Coromandel District because they had a wholesale change over there, where every decision that could be made by a community board was devolved to them.
Yep,
I haven't heard or seen anything lately. All we've heard from Thames Coromandel was about the mayor not wanting, or talking about vaccinations and mandates and things. There was a massive distraction. Hopefully the community boards were getting on with the work while she was creating a publicity crisis. I don't know if you've heard anything of what's happening over there. Or
no, I haven't, other than the fact that I think she moved on, didn't she?
Yeah, that was, she was never going to stay as mayor after the amount of bad press she got. Yeah, but I guess there'll be chances, like local government New Zealand national meetings and things like that, or gatherings or workshops to learn more. Are you going to be the person going to those now you're chair?
The potential's there, but we'll just have to see what comes up.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think, you know, if you take a project like the Wanneroo Walkway, there's some feasibility work being done around what could be done there. Once that's done, then, yeah, we need to go back out to the public and say, hey, guys, what do you want? And things like that. So as a community board, we can sort of drive a lot of those types of things.
Right. I just had to remind myself what the Wanneroo Walkway is. So that's the walks along from the jetty to the bridge on this side of the inlet.
Yeah, and then around to the Lions.
Which engineers say is going to fall apart and people will fall in the water.
Yeah.
I'm being now melodramatic, but
it's not quite that bad. We used to drive go-karts around there without any hassles and never went in the tide.
Dennis remembers the good old days when all things were possible. Hey, I mentioned in the local Raglan News Bulletin that about a wind farm going to be happening off the coast here, and that's actually an area that you used to work in. That was your career was involved in that area?
I was in the power industry, yeah.
In the power industry. So what are we likely to see out there? Or we probably can't see anything, so it'll be over the horizon.
It'll be a reasonable distance out. I don't know a lot about it. I know there's an announcement by the government this afternoon on it. I think we just need to wait and see what they're proposing.
Yeah, and they always like to say, oh, there'll be jobs, but jobs for Raglan out there, I don't know. You need to be an expert, don't you need to know what you're doing to go out there? They can't just have anyone go and
yeah,
work.
But there'll be a lot of sort of general type jobs available as well in that sort of thing. I think you'll see wind turbines being shipped out of Raglan. I think that'll come from Taranaki. But I think you'll see there's a potential for service boats to be working out of Raglan and that sort of thing. So I think I would imagine, without knowing much about it, there'd certainly be opportunity for people in Raglan and for companies in Raglan along the way.
All right, okay.
But let's see what the announcement says later today.
Yeah. All right, folks, I've been talking to Dennis Amore, our new community board chairperson. Dennis, is there anything else that's happening at the moment that you want to bring up, or have we managed to cover everything?
No, I think we've covered the majority of things. I think the only other thing that's sort of, we're keen to make sure that people in the community find out what reviews are being done on plans and things like that, so people get the opportunity to make public submissions on things.
Yeah.
And that, so we'll certainly be making sure all that stuff gets put in front of the public so they can see what's going on.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for coming in, Dennis.